Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A lot of us lost money on this, on whether Sam was going to show up or not this morning. And it is our pleasure to have the president and CEO of the Boston Red Sox. Are we going Instagram Live? I'll go Instagram Live, my Instagram. So Greg Hill won. I almost said Greg Hill 107. You knew that was going to happen.
Of course.
Greg Hill, WEEI is how you could follow me on Instagram. And we're going to go Instagram Live with the program director of WEEI, Sam Kennedy. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Good morning.
Good
Congratulations
morning.
On the new gig. And
thanks for approving us. Yeah. I know there was a lengthy review process on whether or not you would approve us for the radio station or not.
Yeah, let me tell you something. If I were program director of WEEI, I'd be all Pearl Jam all the time.
Wow. Breaking news.
I wouldn't have,
You and Theo.
A clue.
You and Theo.
Yeah.
I want to talk obviously about yesterday, but just real quick, this theory floats around that the Red Sox control the content on this radio station. Do you have any comment on that?
Yeah, I know there's a narrative out there that we have influence over the content, and you know, I've said it before, you say it till you're blue in the face. I mean, our contract with Entercom is limited to control over the game broadcast. So
that's it.
To the extent that there's talent decisions made in game, pregame Red Sox coverage, Red Sox do have approval rights over that talent. But with respect to other day parts of the radio station, that is exclusively within the control of management here at Entercom, at WEEI, and we got enough problems of our own running the Red Sox. So we focus on the business of the Red Sox, and we have absolutely nothing to do with who's on the air, who's not on the air. Those are business decisions. We want Entercom, Boston, and WEEI to be successful. We're business partners. I mean, Entercom pays the Red Sox a significant rights fee. We're grateful
Maybe
for
not
that.
After this year.
Yeah. Well, you know, the radio business has been through some trials and tribulations. It's been hard, and Entercom's been loyal to us. They've been a rights holder for decades, long before we ever got here. John Henry, Tom Werner, Larry Lucchino, and our group came in 18 years ago. Entercom was here. They'll be around, I'm sure, long after we're gone as a partner of the club. So we do not have any influence over the talent throughout the radio station, but we do wish the station well, want them to be successful. And we do share a lot of mutual sponsors and advertisers, which fuel this industry. So we work together with a lot of the advertisers on our team. True Parkinson works with Dana Panapinto and all the advertisers, and we're all supported by them, and so that's the extent of the collaboration.
Now, with regard to the broadcast, were you like Mrs. Castiglione and very upset that Danielle and I were on it the other night?
It's hard to go on and do those things live. Joe Castig is a legend. Jan Castiglione is tough. I wouldn't mess with her personally.
But no, we weren't
pissed. We were probably more pissed about what was going on in the game at that particular moment.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's our focus.
Well, Sam Kennedy's here, president, CEO of the Red Sox. You know, the question that's going to be asked by everybody in here, nothing done yesterday. What kind of a message do you think that sends to players, to fans, and tell us a little bit about why nothing happened?
Yeah, well, it was a long, you know, it's obviously not just a day, it's really a few weeks, really, when you start getting into the trading deadline window. And we were fortunate enough to make a deal for Andrew Cashner to bring him in to try and fortify that rotation, take some pressure off the bullpen. So that deal got done early, and there was a desire to try and do something yesterday, to be clear. The fundamental issue in baseball, and every club faces this, is the short-term, long-term inherent conflict. And we face it, other clubs face it. And yesterday at the deadline, there were lots of proposals flying around, going back and forth, and phones going crazy. But at the end of the day, we, the Red Sox, were not willing to part with some of the pieces that we think are long-term pieces of the Red Sox. Our job, my job, is to ensure we have the revenues, the resources, the right people in the right positions, making the decisions, and that we can be competitive in 20, not just 2019, but 2020, 21, 22, so on and so forth. So it's really the hardest part of the job when you have to make decisions not just with a let's win tonight mentality, but what does this move potentially do to this club in 2020, 2021, 22? I mean, you look at some of the players on the field, Rafael Devers and Xander Bogaerts, Jackie Bradley, Andrew Benintendi, all of those guys, all of those guys were parts of proposals that we've received in past years. And, you know, kudos to our whole baseball operations management, going all the way back to the Theo Epstein days and Ben Cherington and Mike Hazen and now Dave Dombrowski, for holding on to a lot of the core assets that have allowed us to win four World Series championships in Boston. But when you get to the deadline day and it's as quiet as it was, we totally recognize that can be disappointing and frustrating. But the message, to specifically answer your question, that it sends to our fans is we believe in this group. This is a group that achieved something incredible last year and has the talent. We saw a little glimpse of it over the weekend against the Yankees, and hopefully we'll get our starters to give us some more length. We know we can score runs. We've been scoring a lot of runs this year, and hopefully we'll get in the mix here. We're a couple games back of the wild card. We're 9 games over .500, so we feel like we have a chance to be right in there. And if you can get into the postseason tournament, anything can happen.
We'll find out how much control you have over the radio station when Ken asks his question, because I know he's a little frustrated.
Well, in general, Sam, what do you think of the bullpen right now?
Well, it's I think they're taxed. I think they've had a lot of pressure on them. Our starters haven't been giving the length that you need. When you look up every night, you see 3 or 4 or 5 innings, and you think you got to have 3 or 4 bullpen guys carry you through every single day. That's really difficult, puts a lot of strain on them. So you get to those later innings, and you've got, you know, guys that have been pitching night in and night out. That's difficult. So we need some more length from our starting pitchers, and I think that'll help out. And actually, our bullpen really did a great job to sort of keep us in this thing earlier in the year. But I think as we got later in the season, they've become a little bit more tired. We've got Nady Eovaldi coming back. He obviously didn't do a lot of rehab starts, so he's hopefully going to be a piece that'll really help. Ryan Brazier's getting straightened out, so hopefully he'll come back and help us out. And we think that things will start to stabilize and turn around. But at the end of the day, you really do live and die with your starting pitching. And if we can't get more length and consistency from our starters, we're going to have problems through these final 50 games. So that's really the focus, and the staff and Alex Cora are focused on that.
Dave Dombrowski has been given the nickname Trader Dave for a reason. He's been so active at past deadlines. It's hard, I think, for fans to understand why this year he wouldn't at least have made a move. How difficult was it for him to sit idly by, and was there a directive from ownership to not make a move?
Yeah, well, he did make a move. Acquired Andrew Cashner, and just wasn't at the 11th hour. So whether you like that move or didn't like that move is something we can debate. But I commend Dave for not making a move. Sometimes the best deals you make are the ones that you don't. You know, Rafael Devers could have gone many, many times over the last 2 or 3 years, and wow, if we had moved on Rafi, think about what that would have meant to this club. So he did a good job of working the phones, getting different proposals, and ultimately saying no to deals that he thought might have harmed the club moving forward. And if we didn't have the full confidence in this group, I think you would have seen a more significant reconstruction or moving players around or a big kind of shake-up trade. There were some discussions that involved major league players and really rattling cages and shifting things around. I'm glad personally those didn't happen, because I believe in the guys that we have out there right now. But I certainly, I grew up a mile from Fenway Park. I'm a Red Sox fan my entire life. I understand when a big deal isn't done, or any deal on the deadline day doesn't get done. It can be frustrating for the fans, and So we recognize that. We respect that. I talked to Brian Cashman after the deadline. There was a kind of a scary picture of him on the back of the New York Post. He was getting roasted back there. You just have to realize, you know, it goes with the territory. It's hard in all these sports. The most difficult part of these jobs is player personnel moves, and you're betting on human capital, and that's a really, really tough thing to do. So understand and grateful for our fans who have supported us this year and all the 18 years that we've been here, and we need to earn their trust and support, and we've got 50 plus games to do that. So hopefully we'll get back on track here.
There are some who believe that there was an edict from above that Dave could not make a move.
Yeah, not true. Not true at all. I think as evidenced by our track record here in Boston over 18 years, John Henry, Tom Werner, these guys have they've won four World Series championships with different field managers, different general managers, different presidents, CEOs. We've had some stability at ownership, but we have had some change within the front office and on field. And the one consistent thing throughout those 18 years is full support of the organization to field a team not only worthy of the fan support, but worthy of going to the postseason or trying to make a run for the postseason. So the only mandate and edict that John and Tom and yours truly gave to those in baseball operations is, listen, we want to make sure we are not giving away too much for the future. We don't want to just try and win a World Series in 19, but we want to be good in 20, 20, 21, 22, 23. And I know Dave and his team, Eddie Romero, Brian O'Halloran, Raquel Ferreira, Gus Quattlebaum, the men and women in the front office of the Red Sox who work so hard, recognize our desire for short-term and long-term success. And we also recognize the fundamental conflict that presents in our operation, in our business. It's really hard. But no, there was no edict to sit on your hands and not do anything. But it was, look, let's make sure we're not giving up too much of our young talent and our prospects so we can try and be competitive as we move forward.
And Dave has 1 year left on his contract. Do you expect that he continues
Dave,
to run operations after that?
Dave, you know, I would never talk about anyone's employment agreement. I don't know if you guys have that policy around here. I don't think you do have that policy around here. You guys talk about each other all the time. In our front office, we don't talk about our colleagues and our employees. But I will say Dave has been a general manager, head of baseball operations for nearly 40 years. He's likely headed to the Hall of Fame given what he's accomplished in his career. He is under contract. He's under a long-term contract, and I'll leave it at that. He's been a great colleague and a terrific member of our organization. Won a World Series here in Boston, which puts you up in the upper echelon of sports figures in New England. So I'll leave it at that.
Sam Kennedy is our guest, the president and CEO of the Boston Red Sox.
Sam, so obviously, you know, you just won a World Series last year, and I know the idea is that, you know, complaining for a couple of years after your team wins a championship, but
no, that's okay. We can complain every
you know
day.
this is Boston.
Yeah,
we have a duck boat addiction, a certain set of expectations. I mean, how much longer will the suffering go on, people? It's been 176 days since our last duck boat parade. But to the point though about this team, you know, it can be difficult to keep the eyeballs and keep the clicks headed in the right direction for the Sox because Pat's camp is kicking up. Their first preseason game is in a week. And like you said, the bullpen has been taxed. I know they got a 4.5 ERA, which is much higher than you would have expected given what they accomplished last year, though you suffered losses with Kimbrel and Joe Kelly. But the starting rotation, you're still the highest scoring team in baseball, but the starting rotation is over a full run higher than last year, but you got almost $100 million tied up in these guys. Sale can't win at home. Price has been very inconsistent. He's been flat out bad pretty much since the post-Eck incident. And last night was Porcello's ninth game giving up five or more runs, and this is a contract year for him. So internally,
and he owes you for a couple televisions.
Yeah, thank God he didn't hurt it. Forget the televisions. Glad he didn't hurt his hands.
Yeah, no kidding. So What's the internal feeling about how why the starters are struggling so much this year?
It's frustration. I mean, you laid it out very well. We made a major investment into our starting rotation. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And our baseball operations philosophy with Dave at the helm has been that starting pitching is the key to life and the key to success. And there's an old saying in baseball, you're only as good as your next day's starter. I think if you went down the list to a man, each and every starter would tell you that they need to be better. This group has been as accountable as any Boston sports team that that I've seen or witnessed. I've been here a long time. I grew up here, and I've been back here for 18 years. And I know it's annoying for fans and for all of us in the front office to sit there and hear guys say, well, I stunk tonight, or I need to do better. Right. But that's all you can do. When you're not performing at a level that you're used to, we just ask that our guys be accountable, and they work hard to get better. And we have an incredible staff, and Dana Lavangi and Brian Bannister and Alex is working with these guys. And the improvement to the 2019 Red Sox, probably should have led with this, it's got to come from within. It's got to come from that clubhouse. And our players know it. And they've been frustrated because the expectations are high here. You know, you go around, if we were in any other market in the country, 9 games over .500, a couple games out of a wild card, you'd say, all right, we're right there. But coming off of a season where it was just magical, we won 2 out of every 3 games and 108 games in regular season, it feels like a letdown season, which it has been. So we got to get going. There's time. Time is running out, and you know, I mentioned 50 plus games. It'll be an exciting stretch run here, but we got to do better, and we know that.
But at $241 million or whatever it is, you can't be happy with this team's performance to date.
Yeah, we've invested more resources into our baseball operation than any other team in baseball, right? So a certain set of expectations go along with that. We can't do that without the fan support. We never ever take it for granted that we've got the best fans, whether it's fans that come and buy tickets or fans that come to our concerts or fans that watch on TV, listen on WEEI. We have invested heavily in this baseball operation, and our expectations are high. That's what goes with professional sports in general in 2019, but especially in Boston when we're in this era, unprecedented era, with the Patriots, Celtics, Bruins, and Red Sox doing what these ownership groups have done. It's just been remarkable.
Where does the team stand on an extension for Mookie?
We would love Mookie Betts to be a Red Sox forever. He's one of the most dynamic players in the game. Obviously MVP quality, but more than that, he's a homegrown guy. You know, he was drafted by the Red Sox, incredibly drafted in the 5th round. Imagine all those scouts and baseball ops people around the country. No, I'm going to pass on Mookie Betts, 5 to, including us, by the way. Pass.
He's your pick number 199.
And think about that. You pass on Mookie Betts. He arrives on the scene. He's just an incredible player, but more than that, you know, to see him just the other day, Lisa Sherber came in with the Jimmy Fontaine program, and he came out and he sat and talked to every single one of them, and he's just a great, great guy. And so contract negotiations are difficult for the most elite players in the game, but we've been clear from John Henry, Tom Werner, me, Dave, Brian O'Halloran, we have professed our undying love for Mookie Betts. We've met with Mookie Betts. There have been substantial conversations over the past 3 years about what we may do that may work for him. We are not engaged in any type of contract discussions during a season. We wouldn't do that because of the distraction that could cause. But I'll tell you, we would love to have him here for the long term, and remain hopeful that that may be possible.
Were there any internal discussions about trading him before the deadline?
You know, no specific discussions about Mookie Betts or any other player. Just a general discussion, I think, which is healthy. About a week before the deadline, ownership and Dave and the team, we sit down and just kind of go through, all right, what are things looking like? And I think it's responsible for teams in our position that have the resources. We have great assets. We have great scouting player development. We said to ourselves, let's see what's out there on the market, and would there be a willingness to listen to any deal? And the honest answer to that is yes. I think you'd be irresponsible to not at least listen. Were there any substantive discussions, or actually any discussions that got to any type of ownership level on any of our more elite players? No, there were not.
Sam Kennedy, President, CEO of the Boston Red Sox, is our guest this morning. Was the White House visit thing a distraction for this team at all?
Yeah, I think it was, just because it has become such a controversial thing, unfortunately, in today's world. And when I say it was a distraction, do I think it translated to wins and losses on the field? No, I don't.
You don't?
No, definitely not. Alex Cora handled this so beautifully, and I remember being on the charter back from L.A., after winning the World Series, and we were talking up in the front of the plane, me and Alex and Dave. We said, all right, this is great. We just won a World Series. What are we going to do about the White House? That's the natural question right now, yeah, in today's world of, yeah, professional sports. And we talked long and hard about it, and we essentially decided at that time that, look, we want to go because we do not want to make, ironically, we don't want to make this a political issue. The Red Sox need to be above politics. We need to allow our fans, our players, our employees have their own political views. And so we decided if we didn't go, that would be a political statement. We'd gone twice under Bush and once under Obama. We're going to go under Trump. Lots of hate mail, email, social media on that side of the equation, yeah, but I'm sure there would have been equally as much on the other side. So we wanted to stay consistent. We wanted to give the players the opportunity to go, the front office, ownership. And I'll tell you what, I don't care what your politics are. The opportunity to go to the White House, to have that honor, is a once-in-a-lifetime
No matter who's
thing.
Sitting there.
Yeah, absolutely.
No
and,
matter who's
and,
sitting there.
And we had an incredible day. The players that went enjoyed it immensely. Their families went, and we don't regret going for 1 minute.
A lot of great burgers from McDonald's.
And we actually didn't eat. I was hungry throughout the entire
no
day,
food.
But no food. No, no food.
So, all right, I'll take the sword. I'm one of those, you know, I hate it when mom and dad fight kind of types, just from the way I grew up. And this past season, we saw that the Celtics faced a little bit of a PR nightmare, or some frustrations with the Kyrie Irving situation and some perceived infighting, and then a disappointing season. Now, you've said thus far the season's a little bit disappointing, and there could be an issue that fans are upset about some of the infighting that's taken place vis-a-vis what happened with Dennis Eckersley, who's a fan favorite, and David Price, who helped pitch the team to a World Series last year. We know he's got all the cards. Internally, do you guys try to, or at least he holds them or says he does, do you guys have discussions, or have you guys addressed this so that we the fans can hear less drama about what's taking place with beloved pitchers and former pitchers and analysts, and can just focus on the game? Because I know you guys don't want to head into an off season where you have to continue addressing matters that shouldn't be impacting the quality and enjoyment of the game.
Yeah. The short answer is yes. Have we addressed it? Yes. Have we addressed it successfully and perfectly and executed flawlessly? Probably not, because people are still talking about it. So that's unfortunate. Look, Dennis Eckersley is a Hall of Fame pitcher. I've known him for my 18 years here. He's an incredible guy. Works hard. He's one of the best broadcasters, by the way, in baseball on a local level and a national level. David Price is probably on his way to the Hall of Fame. He's won us a World Series, put the team on his back last year during the postseason. He knows he's our team leader. He and I have had many discussions, direct, honest, frank discussions with each other. And Dennis Eckersley and I have had frank, direct, honest conversations. I think those two guys are never going on vacation together. Sometimes, you know, you like everyone to get along and love each other. We are a family. Sometimes things happen, and that's not possible. And so I'll leave it at that. But I've got a ton of respect for both guys and what they've accomplished in their career. And for us, it's all about creating an environment for success in that clubhouse. And I'll put our front office operation up against any in the country. I think we've created an environment for success, and the results have been there on the field.
But when you sit down and talk to David Price about something like that, What's the reaction? What kind of attitude does he have?
I'll keep those conversations private, because I wouldn't air out any conversations related to personnel issues. But I'll leave it at that. But the organization has addressed these issues internally, and we'll continue to do so. Whether we're perfect and execute flawlessly, like I said, that can be debated and discussed, but we'll do our best to keep everything going in a positive direction.
How long do you have this morning? Can I take a quick break and then
four hours?
Three or four hours?
I'm sure your listeners really get this guy off the air.
Well, I think Lou would probably like to talk to you this afternoon. He's not very happy.
Yeah. Lou should come over to the office this afternoon. We'll chat.
Sam, how's David doing?
David, I'm glad you asked. He's doing really, really well.
That's great.
But he was not doing well for a long time. I mean, the injuries he sustained were horrific. I mean, you probably saw the video that we all saw, just chilling. When you get news like that, it's like, whoa, you know, it just stops you in your tracks. But he's doing much, much better. Larry Ronan, our team internist, is just a saint, and he's been with him every step of the way. He's recovering now. He feels a lot better. He's up and moving around.
He's enjoying big fat hunks of meat.
I saw that.
That steak looked fantastic.
I'm not sure that's what the doctors are telling him is the best path to success, but David will be back, and we're just so thankful for the care he's had while back in Boston.
How did that, getting him to Mass General, how did that end up coming about?
Yeah, so Sunday night I was settling into, I was hoping to have a quiet night, and my 16-year-old son and I were hoping to watch the Bruins game, and all of a sudden I got the call from Eddie Romero, got a call from one of our employees down in the Dominican who was actually there and told us what had happened, and so we immediately tried to go into action. Your first reaction is, what can you do to help? How can we fix this? And we didn't know at that point which hospital he was going to, but we very quickly were able to track him down, and we worked with an air ambulance company to get him out of there the next day. The doctors in the Dominican did a great job, but knowing that we have the best hospital community here, arguably in the world, after a gunshot wound, especially with the chance of infection, we thought it'd be really important to get him here. So we connected with an air ambulance company Sunday night, and by Monday, late day, he was being transported out of Santo Domingo and flown up to Boston, and that's where he was for about 5 weeks, and just a horrific incident, and hopefully we never live through something like that again.
Yeah. Ken is frothing at the mouth to ask his question about the financial state of
Boston. Well, Sam runs the business side of it, I wanted to double back on the financial part of it, Sam. John Henry had said to our Rob Bradford in London, the team was over budget last year, and it was a question of how much money the team wanted to lose this year. How did the business side play into yesterday's decision to stand pat, and how is the budget right now?
Yeah. Well, the budget elements always factor into any type of player personnel decisions, and we won't talk publicly about our budget specifically, because we believe that could give or create a competitive disadvantage for the Red Sox. We don't want Theo or Cash or Mike Hazen or any of these predators out there who are trying to take advantage of our minor league system or make a deal with us to know how much money we spend on players what our strategy is. But I can tell you, John Henry said it well. It's not a question of our operating profit. It's a question of at the Red Sox P&L, what we're willing to, I'll say, invest instead of lose on an operating basis. We have, for the last several years, had the highest payroll in all of Major League Baseball. So our incredibly loyal fans should feel good about the fact that John and Tom have blessed our continued investment, not just into Major League payroll, but international signing, scouting, player development, our front office staff, our analytics group, I'd say the best coaching staff in all of baseball. So there is a set limit target that you'd like to be at, but John and Tom have demonstrated in their 18 years here willingness to go way over that target limit each year. Some years we've been around the CBT threshold, some years we've been below, but more recently we've been way over and over in a big way. And that investment in 2018 especially delivered a World Series championship, so I believe it was well worth it. But you do need to have a financial lens on all these decisions just to make sure that your operation is sustainable as you go forward.
We talked about Mookie. Any extension talk with Martinez?
Right now, no. No discussions going on with any of our players on the current roster. We'll wait for the off-season and engage in those discussions at the appropriate time. Right now, the focus is on 2019 with respect to the guys in uniform.
So yesterday, speaking of budget, parting with the future, and going for it, the Astros made a hell of a move, like we're talking about, in acquiring Zach Greinke, and they paid pretty handsomely for it. What was the internal reaction at Jersey Street yesterday when you saw they made that move?
Oh no, he's coming to the American League.
Yeah,
yeah, this guy, what a talent, and kudos to Mike Hazen and Ami Alcide and Jared Porter and the group out in Arizona, Ken Kendrick. They did a great job,
right,
giving themselves some flexibility.
They parted with real talent, Goldschmidt and then now Greinke.
They have, yeah. They're going through a bit of a retooling. I don't know if they would call it a full rebuild, but it was a great move. Anytime you can add a pitcher of that caliber to your rotation on top of what you already have, they're going to be dangerous as we go down here. We've lost to them in 17, and we were able to beat them in 18, and hopefully we'll be in the playoffs against them in 2019. But they definitely got a lot better yesterday. There's no doubt about that.
Sam Kennedy is our guest, president, CEO of the Boston Red Sox. You guys surprised that NESN ratings are down 14%?
Yeah, you know, I would say it's a general trend across live content and sports in general. We have seen a dip in years post World Series. I think there's so much excitement and build up. But I think it's important to also recognize that baseball gets beat up a lot at the national level. I think there's a narrative, you know, the sport is dying or, you know, falling off, and attendance is down. And I like to just make sure that we're dealing in facts. And so I think this is an opportunity for me to just point out that, you know, we're a $10 billion plus industry. Revenues are strong. Player compensation is at the all-time highest levels. Participation in youth baseball, we should be screaming this from the mountaintops here in New England and all across the country. More boys and girls are playing baseball and softball than ever before. 26 million kids right above basketball, and then the other sports fall off behind. There was a Wall Street Journal article a couple months ago that showed the increase in baseball and softball participation rates since 2014 has increased 20%. So it's actually the fastest growing youth sport in the United States. Participation, we're probably taking a chunk out of sports like football and soccer that are having some concussion and head injury issues. But baseball is not dying. We're packing Fenway every night. We've got unbelievable fan support. We just have a different product. You know, we play 162 games, 81 games at home. We sell about 3 million tickets a year. The other major sports in Boston sell combined less than 2 million tickets. So it's just a different format. And believe me, there's no bigger Pats, Bruins, and Celtics fan than me. I'm not discrediting those sports. It's just a different product. When you play for 6 months and you've got a game every single night for 11 straight days, it's the way that our fans consume our product is different. You have a big social gathering for an NFL game or yeah. hockey or basketball. But baseball is a different product. It's the best sport in the world. And we need to be telling that story because kids and boys and girls are playing at high levels, and the sport is now growing, and that's something we need to take advantage of.
Is there a way to get the games in under 7 hours?
Grant you is absolutely the number one issue we have to be tackling at Major League Baseball.
What would you do?
Well, I would do Rob Manfred is our commissioner. I will tell you, he is on this. He needs to continue to be on this. He has incredibly smart people working for him. We're not going to put a clock on the game. Baseball will not be a sport that has a clock on it for the length, but I think we could have a clock on the sport for the pace, for the inactivity, for the dead time, the pitching changes, the getting the batter to stay in the batter's box.
A shock collar
Get the pitcher to throw the ball. I mean, Chris Sale is a perfect example of that, his current struggles notwithstanding. Get the ball, throw the ball. I've talked to Torrey Lovullo, I've talked to John Farrell, I've talked to Alex Cora, Tony La Russa, every baseball lifer that I know says get the game going and you will get back to you're not going back to 2 hours and 15 minute games. You might not even go back to 2.5 hours, but if we could get back to 240, 245, that's a great place to be. Red Sox average game time in 2019 is about 3 hours and 24 minutes. It's just too long. We have families and kids and that are coming to Fenway Park, and we need to give them an experience that's 3 hours or less. That really, really is the target. And of course, that has to be negotiated between Major League Baseball and the Players Association, and everyone's interests need to be aligned with that, because I do think that is the number one critical issue facing our sport, and I know that people on Park Avenue are focused on it, and the Red Sox stand ready to help in any way we can. It's really important.
Ken, are you satisfied this morning? I mean, you were very upset. Are you satisfied with the answers you got from Sam Kennedy?
Upset's not the word. Perplexed.
Just perplexed.
We were all expecting the blockbuster, you know?
Yeah.
I think everybody was expecting a major deadline move.
Sam was too.
No. I wasn't expecting a blockbuster. I understand, you know, big deals, big splashes at the deadline are exciting, and sometimes... sometimes they work. My 18 years. Sometimes they don't. I remember 14 and 15. Boy, we had some. We won the World Series in 13. 14 and 15. I can't tell you the proposals that came in for Xander Bogaerts, and then later Andrew Benintendi and Jackie Bradley Jr. And by the way, Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
And you know, you want to. Sometimes you ferociously protect your prospects and you overvalue them, but in those particular cases, that was the right move because it caused us to win a World Series championship in 18. So short-term gratification is really nice, and we all, human nature, we all love it, but we have to be long-term oriented as well. So it's a push and pull, and I understand it can be frustrating on deadline day when there's not a big splash.
Yeah, Greg, yesterday was the 15th anniversary of the Nomar trade.
Yeah, I remember that day, boy.
Wasn't your cage a little rattled when you heard the Sox moved, and it worked because Cabrera came in and was great, and Minkiewicz was a necessary piece. He still stole the ball at the end, but I remember, everyone can kind of remember where they were when you heard they traded Nomar.
Yeah, we were sitting in the offices in the old baseball ops offices in the basement, and looking back now, people may say, "Oh, well, that was well received." No, we were getting killed. The face of the franchise for Doug Minkiewicz and Orlando Cabrera? Are you bleeping kidding me? Was the reaction, if you remember. And it wasn't until early, maybe mid-August, where the team started to get on a roll. We had a series against Baltimore where we really started putting up a lot of runs, and our defense was better. The fatal flaw that we saw in that team was our defense. Theo shored up the shortstop position, the first base position, and the rest, as they say, is history. But that was a good example of what, you know, what is going on here. And so the job of these player personnel executives is really tough, because you're paid to make unpopular decisions. You're paid to sometimes not make a deal. So that's a perfect example of a trade deadline move that was not well received.
Well, thanks for being here.
Thank you, guys. Great to be with you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.